Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray at rte.ie. There's a definite cloud over everything today. So yesterday morning, parents, as I did this morning, waved their 8 to 10 year olds goodbye as they head off to school, Robb Elementary School in Texas, and then they'll never see them alive again. That's what happened. And I was listening to the ambassador to Ireland there saying, surely this has to mark a change, and then saying, well, we've been here before so many times. And at a distance, it's almost impossible to understand. And you heard Ted Cruz, who's pro-gun lobby man, saying on Morning Ireland this morning, he wasn't obviously speaking to Morning Ireland, or I heard on another programme, but they played a clip saying that the solution was to have armed security in schools. My word. Yeah, that's a great environment to have your children in. People walking around the school with weapons to protect them. And I've told you this before, because we've spoken about this before. People have returned from the United States of America, and their main reason to returning to Ireland was because their children, when they got to a certain age in school, they had to do drills in case a shooter came into the school. And they said, well, we can't bring up our children in a country like that, in a society like that. It's impossible to get your head around, isn't it? Saying goodbye and then never seeing that little boy or girl again. And you would think it's preventable. It is preventable. And the amount of power, I was listening to all the commentary this morning and listening again to Liveline, the amount of power that the gun lobby have and have had in America for so many years is almost evil. And that's the only way you can describe it. And the fact that they can watch and listen and read about shooting after shooting. This is the 27th school shooting in the United States of America this year. The biggest, the most tragic, the biggest loss of death since Sandy Hook 10 years ago. And nothing seems to change. Their constitutional right to carry arms. I remember seeing a brilliant Michael Moore documentary, and he doorstepped Charlton Heston, and Charlton Heston, I don't think he's still alive, but when he was alive, he was a pro-gun lobbyist, the famous actor, and he doorstepped him and said, how can you, and they're in a different world, their heads are on a different planet, they think differently. And he recorded at the time, that particular year, the number of gun-related deaths in the States, and then he went up to the Hudson River and went across to Canada, and the number there was like a fraction of it. And why? What was the difference? It was about the Constitution, it was about laws, it was about attitude. We all know that having a weapon in any situation, it probably puts you in more of harm's way than not having it. And yet that's the argument that they spin out again and again and again. And they've loads of money, and they've loads of lobbyists, and they've loads of influence. And I can't see anything changing, can you? I suppose the message again is to give your loved ones a bigger hug this evening when you go home from work, or if they're next to you now, give them a bigger hug. And we'll take a moment just out, and there are no words, I suppose, for this. So we'll just take a moment, a few minutes out, to reflect and gather our thoughts. Colin McNamara and late afternoon, 51551 ray at rte.ie. And just a reminder, tomorrow we had Mick Kelly in from Grow It Yourself a few weeks ago. We're trying to get you growing your own veg. I think he told us you could save over €400 a year if you grow your own veg, and you can do an awful lot in a plot the size of a car parking space. He's back in tomorrow. So if you're a bit like me and trying to do it at home, it's not working out. And if you have any questions or queries for Mick, who knows an awful lot about gardening, You know, whether it's your basil or your beetroot or your rainbow chard or your French beans, whatever it is, get them into us, ray@rte.ie, and we'll put them to Mick tomorrow. He'll be back in, and that's Mick from Grow It Yourself. So any gardening questions that you have, get them into us now, and we'll sort through them and get the most pertinent ones to Mick tomorrow. Well, we're on that sort of thing. I see that First Dates are looking for featured daters. Now, I think that's just people to go on the programme. I don't know what a featured dater is opposed to an ordinary dater, but they're looking for people over 18 who want to appear on First Dates. It's a great programme. Coco make it. And if you're over 18, you can go to cococontent.ie, cococontent.ie. And the stipulations, I'm just reading here, permanent legal resident of the island of Ireland. You're not employed by Coco. No member of your household, immediate relative, brothers and owner are employed by Coco. And by submitting an application, you agree to the terms and conditions set out there. So cococontent.ie if you want to be on First Date. Now, 51551 ray@rte.ie. I must tell you about our quiz. We're looking for two people to come on and answer three questions each. Bits of songs, bits of news reports, TV shows and movies. And we've a great prize this week. It's a two-night stay for two people in the Photo Island Resort, which is nestled at the heart of a peaceful island down in County Cork, surrounded by gorgeous scenery and just 8 miles from the bustling city of Cork, the real capital, they would claim. So it's a two-night stay for two people, breakfast both mornings, dinner on one of the evenings in the Amber Lounge. You'll be staying in one of Photo Island Resort's luxurious guest rooms. And loads of things to do down there. They have an indoor swimming pool, world-class spa. They have a fine dining restaurant called The Cove. There's a golf course and loads of walking around the place in mature woodlands. And of course, the resort's Oriental Garden. You can find out all of that about the five-star resort at photoisland.ie, photoisland.ie. So if you want to come on and be in with a chance of winning that prize, here is your qualifying question for today. The TV adaptation of Sally Rooney's book continues tonight on the telly. It's called Conversations with Friends. Sorry, is it called Conversations with Friends or Conversations with Enemies? Is it called Conversations with Friends or Conversations with Enemies? 0818715925. 0818715925. And good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Sue is on from Chapel Lizard. I run a small what are they called? They're Nienra. It's a Gaelscoil preschool, isn't it, in Dublin? We had our sports day today out in a small public green space. Excited children, proud parents, medals, dancing and a picnic. Our only worry, would the rain hold off? Now, how very, very lucky we are on this wee island of ours. May those parents and that community in Texas find the strength to live, says Sue. And that's it, yeah. We're just worried about the weather. That's all that we have to worry about. I moved to Dublin from Texas a few years ago, and the biggest gift this country has given me is awareness of my own anxiety about mass shootings. I didn't know what it could feel like to walk around without it until I came to Ireland. I'm in tears today for the families in that Texas town. And isn't it mad to think, Ray, that you can't buy alcohol in the US until you're 21, yet guns are available at 18? That is mad. Now, I'm joined in the studio by Megan Berry. And Megan is the Traveller Outreach Officer at Maynooth University, where she gained her Master's in Social Science, Community and Youth Work. And she also worked as Community Development Worker on Violence Against Women at Pavey Point. Good afternoon, Megan.
Hi, Ray. How are you? Good. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks so much for coming in. Thanks. We've so much to talk about. We've loads of time.
Yeah.
I want to find out about you and then what you do. And then we'll have general chats about education and the traveller community. But first, let's find out a little bit about yourself.
Brilliant.
Originally from?
I'm originally from Carlow, moved to Cork, back to Carlow.
Right. And how long have you been in Carlow now?
I've been in Carlow, I would say, about 9 years, 8 or 9 years, yeah.
Okay. We better specify from the outset that you're in an elite group of travellers in that you have gone to third level education.
Yeah.
And according to the most recent figures, only 1% of your community reached third level. So that's the sort of the background to what we're talking about today. You're from a family of?
13.
Whereabouts are you?
Right in the middle.
Are
six
you?
Above, six under, yeah.
right. Brilliant. So you had to do something to be noticed.
Had to do something, yeah.
So you went off to college that year. Wow, what's the age range?
This could be so wrong. I'm so bad at keeping the names.
No,
the ages. And names. I would say from 12 to 33.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. The youngest is 12, the oldest 33.
And you're 25, 26?
I'm 25.
25. Yeah. Okay. So talk to us then a little bit about your experience in education, right from primary school up.
Yeah, so I had a very widespread variety of different education. I would have spent the last 25 years in the education system across four primary schools, two secondary schools, a college and a university. I'm working in a college at the minute, so, you know, I haven't stepped out of that yet. But and I don't think I want to.
Right.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's been a fantastic experience for me. As I said a minute ago, very different schools were to the secondary schools, and then again different experiences in college. So it's been a lot of going, a lot of moving.
Okay. So as a member of the travelling community, can you remember when you first realised that there was something different about you in a school setting?
Yeah, I think it was, and it was actually my proudest moment.
Was it?
Yeah, it was during my junior cert, actually, because I always done very well in school. I always enjoyed school, you know, but I got really good marks, like, in the junior cert, and I remember going for a drive with Daddy afterwards, and he said, that's brilliant, Megan, like, not a lot of travellers go on or do anything like that, you know. So then I was thinking, well, actually, I hadn't a clue that travellers don't, you know, progress, or that there was no good outcomes, and I hadn't seen travellers progressing, you know. And I, when he said that to me, then I thought, well, it actually must be a big thing, do you know. So it was a very proud moment, and my sister.
So that's interesting. So you reached the age of 15.
Yeah, I'd say about 15. Yeah.
Without knowing that a lot of people in your community didn't go further than that.
Yeah, well, do you know what I seen? I seen people doing the same thing all the time. You know, we have very high levels of unemployment rate in the community, and, you know, lack of access to employment and education. But I didn't know what the issues were. I was too young to understand that kind of thing.
Yes,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So I didn't see anyone in my community progress, and I didn't think about college. College wasn't something we spoke about. School wasn't something, you know, that was the main.
So what were the main things then? When you spoke about your future, what did you speak about?
Well, we didn't speak of, like, we spoke about, you know, traditional kind of things. It was more so family was a huge thing. It was settling down. It was children. A lot of my brothers and sisters would have left school early, and that's the route they would have taken, and they're very happy.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for them. But I suppose even in school, it wasn't something we were asked, you know, or, you know, what are you going to do in years to come or something? It just, yeah.
You weren't asked that. Were the settled children asked?
I think, I can recall from experience, we were all asked together, but,
right,
you know, for me, I don't think there was very high expectations.
Right.
If I'm being honest, yeah.
No, but that's interesting you say that, because, you know, I've been doing a bit of research on this, and this is just across the board, not just traveller children, but where teachers have low expectations of children in school,
yeah,
then oftentimes the children meet the teacher's expectations,
yeah,
as in they don't achieve much.
Yeah, so if the teacher, like, believes in you, and, you know, you're going to flourish, you're going to do well, because you know that that's what the expectation is. But unfortunately, like, if you have a teacher that's like, I know, well, you know, we know not a lot of travellers make it in education. Travellers don't want an education. That there can be kind of that stereotype, which, you know, we'd love an education, but unfortunately, a lot of barriers there. But yeah, I suppose you know.
Well, we're going to talk about that, because there's pressures from within your community and from outside your community.
Yeah.
So just on your story, we'll stay with your story for the moment. So you did your junior cert, and did you leave school then?
Yeah. Right. So I left. I went back in. I was doing my fourth year, and I always, as I said earlier, I loved school, so I wanted to do everything in school. But I left school in during my fourth year, and I was thinking, do you know what, maybe it's not for me. And that kind of staying at home gave me a bit of perspective. You know, it wasn't something I wanted to do. I was a bit bored. There was nothing to get up. Like, I was so used to going to school every single day, I don't think I missed a day, that when I had left in fourth year and when I had moved to Carlow, I was thinking, do you know what?
So you're doing nothing, just sitting
doing
at home?
Completely nothing yet.
Okay. And would that be common?
Well, I suppose, you know, when I had moved, it's different in every family. Do you know, we're not a homogenous group.
No,
everybody,
of course,
don't do the same thing.
I know. I didn't say that everybody knew. I said it was a common. Yeah.
It's common. Like, I'll speak to my experience as,
yeah,
you know, my family, they would have got married, or they would have moved on, had children, or, you know, that kind of way. But for me, I didn't. So my own experience of sitting at home, you know, that was...
Well, you were too young to get married anyway, weren't you?
Yeah, I'd say I was.
Yeah.
Or even thinking about it.
So you got bored then?
Yeah. And I remember going into... My brother was saying to me, do you know what? We might get you into one of the youth reaches in Carlow or the youth centres. But I'm not sure if, you know, there was space or, and I knew it wasn't for me because I loved school. And I remember going into the secondary school then in Carlow and just, you know, saying I'd love to carry on my fifth and sixth year if it was possible. Yeah.
And they said?
That was the following year after I dropped out of the fourth year.
Okay, right. So you're only a year out, really.
Yeah.
A year out, right.
Thank
and then
God.
You went on, got your leaving cert, went on to college.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you had that chat about going back to school.
Yeah.
With your family, how did that go?
Well, I suppose, you know, my family, I don't think they really understand, you know, what college is. I never understood what college was when somebody first said it to me because it wasn't spoken about much in my family. So I think, you know, and then the value in education, if they hadn't, if my parents hadn't a great experience or my brothers and sisters, it's very hard for them to value, you know, well, going back to school. And, you know, the way they went about it, they'd done completely different things they were very happy with. And that was a traditional thing in my family. So when...
What sort of things did they
do? As I said earlier, they got married, they had children.
Oh yes, right. Okay.
Like my older brothers and sisters. So that was the norm and that was what people were content and happy with. That was the plan. So I suppose when I was going back to education, it was a lot of fear. You know, well, look, what are you going to educate? What are you going on for? You're not going to get a job. You know, high levels of discrimination and things like that. And I think...
So they were saying, why bother?
Why bother? That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they, and it's not, it didn't come from a malicious place, obviously.
No.
It came from a fear of, you know, you could spend 25 years in the education system, come out the other side of it, and you're not guaranteed a job.
Because
you know what I mean?
You're still a traveller.
Because you're a traveller. Yeah, that's a common issue that is happening, you know, and it's a common fear in the community. It was a fear of my own. Is it going to be a waste of my time? Am I doing all these placements, all this commute and all of this work, you know, on a, am I going to get a job or anything out at the end of it? Is there any incentive? Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah, it's interesting there you say it's a fear.
Yeah.
A fear. And it's an understandable fear. Why run the risk of failure when you can just do what everybody else did?
Yeah. And I suppose the thing for me was the support, do you know, from like... I would say the support from the school system. It was, you know, my secondary school, it was telling, well, you will get a job, you can do it. And that kind of kept me going. It was all of the encouragement and, you know, the support along the way. And I think something that I really value is that saying, you know, you have to see it to be it.
Right.
So role models in the community, you know, travellers who have gone through the education system. I hadn't seen that at a local level. And when I had done a placement, I first done my placement actually in Pabbie Point and... I got to see, that was during my undergrad in social care. So I got to see, you know, a lot of travellers in various aspects of employment and who have come up through the education system, which for me, it was a little bit of hope. It was some kind of light at the end of the tunnel. But actually, if they can do it, I can do it.
Mm.
And I think that's something that's so important to the generations now that are in school and that are looking at going to college, but have these kind of fears.
And that's part of your job in Maynooth. And we'll talk about that in a moment.
Yeah.
So out of the 13 children then, how many have gone to third level?
So me, I was the first, but my sister now, she's completing, which is fantastic. You know, she's completing her degree now in law in Waterford, which is absolutely amazing because, you know, it goes to show the fear of education kind of diminishes when you see outcomes.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
And why do you think, we've discussed the fear of failure, but I suppose there's probably, it sounds to me, a fear of the unknown as well.
The fear of the unknown, yeah, because, you know, with travellers, we're very much used to expecting the worst, you know, no matter where we go in society, expecting discrimination, you know, pretending to be somebody that we're not, changing our identity, hiding our identity. And I suppose that can be very challenging, do you know, and particularly when you step into the education system, you might have teachers, you might have lecturers that only have the best intentions for you, but you're going in with that fear.
Yes.
Okay, and you mightn't disclose due to the fear.
It's sort of hardwired into you.
And that's exactly, it's internalised.
Yes, internalised, depression. Yes. Now, let's talk a bit about that and try and tease it out. And let's use ordinary language as opposed to, your degree language.
Yeah.
So they're fearful of it. And then how do they feel then about you? Because you are now a minority of a minority.
Yeah.
So you are different in your own community because you're one of the very few people who've gone to third level education.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd hope that I'd be different in a good way.
Yeah.
And, you know, as in like, pave, you know, to see it to be a kind of a model, you know, where I've done it and I know that all of travellers coming up in the education system can do it as well. Do you know, I know that they have the capability. We do. Parents want their children to have an education.
Right.
But it's about, you know, really assuring them that the value is there. Firstly, that, you know, we can, the schools can create the conditions for traveller children to be a part of the curriculum.
And is it often, because you mentioned that statistic about the number, the percentage of your community who are unemployed, which is?
84%.
Yes.
Yeah.
And is the link made between education and employment?
Yeah, of course. I think that's a huge link because, you know, you need degrees, you need certificates, you need all this kind of stuff. As you were mentioning earlier outside, you know, the value of the tradesmiths and tinsmiths years ago, that's kind of changing.
Yes.
You know, that's not valued anymore. So in order for travellers to look ahead and see, well, what else can we do and go into a job? Well, they need to go back and they need certificates for all that kind of stuff. But if you're stepping into a place where you're being discriminated against, you know, or that will tell you when you walk in the door, look out for travellers, you know.
Yeah.
It's very
now,
hard.
Have you experienced discrimination in the educational system?
In the education system, I always kind of outshine it with the positive experiences because the positive experience
that's,
for me,
that's
I think...
That's not answering my question, Megan.
I did. I won't tell a lie. I did. And I have to be very honest. You know, I actually experienced discrimination from a very primary level. And, you know, just the kind of assumptions that the teacher knows best. They know what you're going to do. They don't, you know what I mean? They're not going to take on your perspective or what you want to do. I remember there was often times where...
Now don't
you know,
name anybody.
Yeah, of course. Of course. No, there was often times, you know, where I suppose it's the exclusion. Do you know what I mean? And it doesn't happen in all schools. As I said, I've had great experiences throughout the education
what
system.
What sort of exclusion? Excluded from what?
Yeah, well, from the academic curriculum. I mean, I remember being in a class one time and I was put to the back of the class with another traveller girl and we were put at the back to colour in with, you know, markers. And we thought that was great sport. You know, we were saying, thank God for this. We don't have to do the workshop. Any child that age is going to be that delighted, you know.
Yes.
But when I kind of grew up, I was thinking, well, actually, and when I got to grips with everything, that was... Like we had the right, education is a constitutional right. We had the right to be a part of that curriculum. We had the right to be in there and learning with all the rest of the children and being taught history and geography like everyone else. And the impacts of that colouring in and where you are, like where your capacity is and all that kind of stuff, you're left behind, you know.
Yeah. I was reading some stuff last night and a lot is made of the fact that your culture and history isn't included anywhere in school books.
Yeah.
And did you get a sense of that? And was there something you would think should be changed?
Yeah, I mean, years ago, I didn't think anything of it. Like, you know, when you're a child, you don't think of that kind of stuff because your culture is not valued. You don't see anyone talking about travellers in the school. So you don't talk about travellers unless it's, you know, unless somebody comes up and says something to you that might be derogative. But I suppose I can see the huge value and the importance of that because sometimes teachers have lack of awareness. You know, maybe it's not coming from a bad place, it's just that they don't understand, and training is so important to understand traveller students, you know, and to understand where they're coming from, because when you come from a minority group or a marginalised group, education is not going, your issues with education is not going to be the only thing. You know, there might be huge issues with accommodation and where you're coming from, you know, so
there's a lot going on. And in your work, and we'd be skipping to and from you and your work now, but we live in a much more multicultural society in Ireland now than we did 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of experience, but anecdotally, I think, unfortunately, when we're talking about inclusion and diversity and all that, oftentimes the travelling community isn't included in that chat.
Yeah.
That must be frustrating.
I think that's the issue. You know, there's nothing about us without us. You won't know what way to go or how to support travellers or include travellers or create conditions at least for travellers to get the education if you're not getting the conversations with the travellers and looking at the real issues that are on the ground.
Yeah. I was saying that there's discrimination or there's things going on within the community and outside the community. And within the community, is there a fear that if you become, like I'm going to use this phrase, too educated, that you might lose your culture and your tradition?
I think it's a fear of losing your identity in the community, but I don't think it's due to being too educated. I think it might be, you know, sometimes we get too used to, if we're going into a place and we're afraid of the unknown and we change our identity, it's very hard to maintain two identities, you know. Right. So you can go one way or the other, and if you go one way, you can lose it, and it's quite sad. But, and that's what some of the older generation would say, you know, she's gone too posh, or
right.
That kind of way.
Would that have been said about you?
Yeah.
You're gone too posh.
I won't lie, you have
notions above your station.
Yeah, I do. I'm only messing.
But this is interesting. No, because it all sort of informs what's going on.
Yeah.
If there's a fear within the community that if you are educated that you become too posh or whatever,
yeah,
and you lose your identity.
It's not about being too posh.
No,
but if
you lose your identity, you know, it's different words probably for roughly the same thing.
Yeah.
But then that's not going to paint a good picture of education within the community, is it?
Yes, but the thing is, like, it's not, I don't blame the student, because nobody in the whole world is obliged to identify as anything, do you know what I mean? Or they don't have to disclose that they're a traveller, they can keep that to themselves. That's something that, you know, they're not obliged to share with anybody. But I think for themselves, that's the hard part. It's not the hard part for the community, it's the hard part of maintaining two identities, you know, and how...
But they shouldn't have to, should they?
They shouldn't have to, no. They should be allowed to go into a space where they will be accepted for who they are, and they don't have to change their identity.
But that refers to... Yeah. You know, in college and at home.
Yeah.
You know, there's two, because there's two worlds that you live in.
Yeah, so you could step into the doors of college, you know, or something that I always say, if I was going in somewhere and I really needed to, you know, if I knew that they had a reputation of being derogative or discriminating,
yeah,
I would wear a coat and I'd have my hair up or something. I just do something different, because I know, or I talk, you have to change your identity sometimes to be accepted. And unfortunately, that is the way. And then when you come back out, you're back to yourself, you know, and that's only a short period. That could only be for 10 minutes, right? But the thing is, when you have to do that constantly and do it for 3 or 4 years across the education system or whatever way it might be, how mentally draining can that be on students when they're not allowed to have pride in who they are?
Well, they know psychologically that if you're living a lie, the gap between who you really are and who you're pretending to be, the bigger the gap, the more likely you are to suffer mental health issues.
And it's really sad, because that tells us, like, there's something wrong with the system, you know, that.
Okay. So people view your community as what, do you think? In 2022 in Ireland, how do you think your community is viewed by the majority of people? This is just your opinion now.
Well, honestly, I would say that, you know, not much changes. Do you know, going back to 1963 and the commission of the itinerancy report, there's very high levels of discrimination. And when you get, like, when you get a stereotype, that if you get a prejudice, it turns into a stereotype. Stereotype turns into racism. Racism turns into discrimination. And that is not just directed at one person in the community, is directed at everybody. And that doesn't just cause issues with, like, psychologically or mentally, but access to services then, you know, it causes issues in so many regards. And then the health determinants are going to be so much worse when people have low access to, you know what I mean?
The outcomes aren't good, are they? And we know about young traveller men are 7 times more likely to take their own lives through suicide.
Yeah.
How do you explain that? How would you explain that statistic?
I don't think there's any way to explain it. I think it's extremely, like, it's a very stark statistic for a community that only comprises less
40,
than 1% of
the
population, do you know? And it's a very harrowing statistic. So I don't think there is any way to explain it, but it goes to show that there's something wrong, you know, something wrong with the structures, the impacts of discrimination, the impacts of not getting an education, not having an aspiration, not being able to do something that will occupy you, that you have passion with. Do you know, if you have nothing to look forward to, it's going to have a huge impact on your mental health.
How, as you, your job is Traveller Outreach Officer at Maynooth University. So your job, I think I said it in the promo, is to try and get more traveller, members of the travelling community to get through the educational system successfully.
Yeah.
And go beyond junior cert and into third level. And to make that 1%, let's get it 2, 3, 4 double figures.
Yeah.
And then equal with the settled community eventually. That's the aim, isn't it?
That's the aim, yeah.
Yeah. How are you going about that?
Well, I suppose it's a huge question, okay? For me, my role in Manu is providing targeted information and supports to prospective traveller students in schools and to learners in the community, you know, who are thinking about going to college, who have might have fears of going to college. So it's about reaching out to them and, you know, letting them know that the access is here and these are the routes you can go through and this is the financial support that's available. I suppose something that's really important as well is, you know, when students come into the university, it's about really supporting them through their experience, you know, over the 4 years, and then supporting them out of the college. I work on an outreach team of four. So when you say, what are you doing to increase traveller participation? Behind me, you know, there's loads of travellers across universities in Ireland that are working in the area of education. Yeah. You know, the NGOs have been working for strategies to provide targeted mainstream supports for travellers across primary, post-primary and third level for don't know how long. And then you have the universities, the access offices, you know, they're doing fantastic work to support travellers. And I know Manute have always had a great reputation of, you know, not just traveller progression, but traveller retention and then success also on the other side.
Yeah. We spoke to Anne-Marie McDonough.
Yeah.
I think she's a social worker there last year. And she had gone into a group of traveller girls.
Yeah.
and she asked them this question, you know, could you see a traveller girl becoming a doctor, a solicitor or a barrister or whatever, dentist? Yeah. And the answer she got was,
no.
No, yeah. Mm.
And it's sad because, you know, in local areas, like in Dublin, you see so many travellers going on and progressing, you can see, but like in small little towns, it's very hard to get that. And when they don't see it, it's very hard to envision themselves in that situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you can't see it, you can't be it. That's the mantra, isn't it?
That's the mantra.
So if we get to a stage where it becomes just, you know, the norm for members of the travel community to go to third level education, with education comes different attitudes. That's been proven throughout history.
Yeah.
You know, do you look at your community differently now that you've a third level degree and you're looking into things like, you know, society and how it works and discrimination and all that?
That's a really good question. But do you know what? I think I look at myself differently.
Right, go on.
Because I see myself, and it's something, conversations we would have had with lecturers, as, you know, very privileged to have been able to get an education. So it's about going back to the community and how can we support you? Do you know, how can we, as an outreach officer in Manute or as a community worker on the Violence Against Women programme in Pabbi Point, what can we do to really support the community? So how can we give back? And, you know, but I think from my own, I can see the impacts of, you know, internalised oppression. And I know you were saying with the fancy language, but it's about like internalising all of that discrimination and racism that's been directed on you, you know, and blaming yourself and blaming the community for it. I can see the impacts of that.
Right. But that's been handed down as well, some of that.
Yeah.
Now, you've obviously experienced your own one-on-one discrimination. Yeah. But I would imagine, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, that some of that's handed on from generation to generation.
It can.
And I'm suggesting that maybe,
yeah.
And again, I'm not an expert, that maybe if you could break that cycle in some way, you know, and like, obviously the settled community and their prejudice and discrimination, they have a lot of work to do as well. But I think both communities have a lot of work to do. It's not one or the other, it's both.
Both, yeah. I think, it goes back to that, you know, if parents were seeing the value, if parents were seeing so many travellers going through the education system, coming out with good jobs at the end of it, doing what they want to do, they will have more hope and more value in the education system to place their children in that. But if they're coming from a place where they didn't have a great experience...
And they didn't, the majority of them didn't, let's be honest.
If they're coming from that kind of a space, it's very hard for them.
I know, we have to break the cycle, don't we?
I know we have to break the cycle.
You have to break through. You've broken through.
We need more proof. I don't think the 1% is enough.
And that's why you're doing what you're doing.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and it's difficult. I see what you're saying, that because if you, as a parent, had a really bad experience in the educational system and your parental sort of intuition is to protect your child, well, then you don't want them to go into that system that scarred you, that discriminated against you.
Yeah.
You know, that's because you want to protect your child and yet you want an education for them. So it's difficult.
Yeah, and even so, like, you might see travellers, you know, as role models. But these travellers didn't get there by chance, you know, or didn't, do you know what I mean? They worked as hard as they could to get there, and there were so many barriers
against
and issues
all
in the
odds,
way.
Yes.
All of the odds, yeah. So, and I was speaking to a student the other day, and she was saying, we're the lucky ones, and they shouldn't be the lucky ones. There should be so many, do you know what I mean?
Education. She was the lucky ones. That
lucky one to get an education
in
Ireland. Yes. Like, and you can see how sad that is, because it's a constitutional right.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be classed as lucky. It should be the norm. Everybody should have an education if they want it, obviously.
You liked school and you were good at school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not everybody likes school, not everybody's good at it. Yeah. So I suppose you will, a measure of your success and the people you work with will be when travellers who probably aren't that good at school and don't particularly like it,
yeah,
stick with it.
Yeah.
Because that's a real challenge.
And my
isn't it?
Job, you know, is not to go out to the communities or into the schools and say, well, you have to come on to education. You know, mainstream education doesn't suit everybody.
No.
You know, it's not that one shoe fit all approach. But it's my job is not about going in and forcing people into a system. It's about, you know, letting them know that access is there if they want to avail of it.
And the brilliant thing is that there's a change in emphasis now,
yep,
back to trades.
Yep.
And Simon Harris, who's the Minister for Higher Education, is making sure that that happens. Because
yep,
we sort of turned our backs on trades.
Of course, yeah.
And now there's a re-emphasis. And that might suit members of the travelling community in some ways. You know,
yep,
same as it would members of the settled community. You have a big, big job of work, don't you?
Yeah, definitely do, certainly, yeah. But yeah, it's great, you know.
And are both your parents alive?
Yeah, they are, thank God.
Yeah, and how do they feel about you?
Good, yeah. They're very proud. So they are. They're, Mammy is delighted, you know. I can help her with everything that she needs help with now. They're all delighted. Yeah. I
and out of the 13, and don't answer this question if you feel uncomfortable with it, but would they all be able to read and write?
Yeah, yeah, they would, thank
God. And your parents?
Social media nowadays, it's hard not to be able to read and write.
And your parents?
Mammy used to be, but yeah, she is now. And Daddy is very good, yeah.
Right, okay.
Thank God.
Well, hopefully that conversation we've had there has been enlightening for some of our listeners. I wish you well with everything.
Brilliant.
I'm sure we'll chat again.
Yeah.
Thanks, Megan.
Brilliant.
Thanks
so
very
much. Ray.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, listening to your inspiring interview with that successful young lady, Megan was her name, I'm a second level teacher and had a student from the traveller community who went to UCC and is now a teacher herself. She came from a school in a medium-sized town in North Cork. It's all about identifying potential and nurturing ambition. Kind regards, that's Geraldine. And more has been on. Did you hear about the experiment where a young teacher was told that the class she was given to teach was the B class, whereas in fact they were the D class? As a result, her expectations of these students was higher and they achieved better results because of this. Just goes to show. Well, that's, yeah, a lot of research has been done on that, Maura, and it all points to it's about expectations, and the students will meet the expectations whether they're higher or lower than their actual ability. I'll never forget my career guidance counsellor telling me in third year that I probably won't get the points to do veterinary medicine. She said that people from our school don't really get those points. I wanted to do it, but because of what she said, I never applied and ended up getting 550 points. I could have done it. I went back to education 12 years ago at the age of 28 and to do vet nursing, but still, yeah, see. And I'm a qualified teacher and would love to work with members of the travelling community. Is there a way we can volunteer or arrange something? Well, we put that question to Megan before she left and we have details and we will pass them on to you. Now, the Fastnet Film Festival opened today in Skull in West Cork and is running until Sunday. It's been dubbed the Cannes of Ireland, as in the Cannes Film Festival of Ireland. And there will be a series of films, events and talks throughout the week. Co-founder of the festival, Hilary McCarthy, joins me now on the line from Skull. Hello, Hilary.
Hi, Ray. How are you? Good to talk to you. How are things?
Good. You're a very busy person.
Well, I tell you what, it's like doing an Ironman challenge over the last day. We've done a lot of running around, but it's all great. The weather's super. Lots of guests arriving. The bus pulled into town and a horde of students got off. So it's off to a good start. And all the equipment seems to be working so far. So we're happy.
Right. Give me the stats on it. The number of films, the number of venues, the number of stars, all that sort of thing.
Well, we have 300 short films and we have 13 feature films. We've 12 venues. We've 66 events. We have 52 guests And it's everywhere from all over the village in Skull. And also we have an Irish language law, Chonga na Gaeilge, out on Cape Clear.
Right.
So we have two ferries going out that'll take 98 people on each over and back, and a load of events on out there. So plenty to keep people happy.
And all of that with no cinema in Skull.
Well, no, we'd say we have 13 cinemas, but they're very minor mini cinemas. It's cafe viewing. We've everything from the village hall, the parish hall, the bingo hall, you name it. We have the satellite centre upstairs in Jam Jar Juice Bar. We have a great event. It's an Antarctic virtual reality experience. So it's an immersive exhibition where you can smell penguins. It's a cool room, virtual reality headsets, and you watch virtual reality films of a guy called Nick Romerill, who basically went on an Antarctic ship, and you're cutting through the ice, and it's phenomenal. So,
how many years have you been going now down there?
Well, we're 15 years on the go, but this is our 13th festival. So we had a cancellation year, and then we had an online festival last year. So it's great to be back. And I think it's whetted people's appetite. People were really dying to get out and get to an event. So
It looks like you're going to be lucky with the weather because the forecast is good for the weekend. The high pressure is moving in and sticking around.
We've been watching it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've been watching it closely because obviously with people going out on the ferry, you know, we wanted to make sure that it would be comfortable. So it's dry, it's sunny. Our open party is up at Grove House and it's outdoors. So there's live music. So we're delighted that there's no sign of a cloud in the sky, hardly.
OK, and if you were down there star spotting, who would you spot?
Jeepers, everybody from Joe Aylwin, Alison Oliver, Paul Mescal. We've got Lenny Abrahamson, Rose Garnett, Peter Coonan, Maureen Hughes, and Neil Layton from RTE will be here too. We have a plethora more, Grant Keir and if I could think of them all, Michael McCormack's screening his film too, Breaking Out. So.
Well, we'll end with that. We wish you good luck because we had Michael in here. And Fergus O'Farrell, who's the lead singer with Interference, his dad, Vincent, who's a lovely man. That's highly recommended from here. The documentary about Fergus called Breaking Out. And we have one of the songs featured in it called Something Right. Good luck with the festival. It starts today, the Fast Night Film Festival, and it runs until Sunday. Where can people find out more? Fastnightfilmfestival.com. Good luck, Hilary. Thank you very much. See you now. Bye.
The very one.
Bye. That's nice, isn't it? Fergus O'Farrell, and Breaking Out is the documentary about his final years. Amazing singer, amazing songwriter, Skull native, and they're showing that documentary free of charge on Sunday night as part of the Fast Night Film Festival. And remember, I gave that song to Garth Brooks, and every so often I just think about it. I wonder, did he listen to it? And I wonder, did he like it? And I wonder, would he record it? And but none of that's going to happen. But anyway, there you go. That's a little story anyway. Another little story that's doing the rounds down in Skull. Joe Alwyn, who was mentioned there in the interview with Hillary, he is going out with Taylor Swift. Joe is the guy who plays Nick in Conversations with Friends. And seemingly there's a bit of helicopter activity down Skull way. And every time they see a helicopter go, that must be Taylor Swift, because there's rumours doing the round that she's going to arrive over the weekend. Big news, big news. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Grandma, good morning. Thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. We'll be talking to Stephen Mangan, actor and now writer of children's books, and his sister Anita, illustrator of children's books, after our quiz. Yep, reeling in the ears. We have two quizzers standing by to answer three questions each on bits of clips of songs and news reports and TV shows and movies that they will hear in their ears. That's what we call reeling in the ears. And there is a prize. It's a do-not break in the Fota Island Resort. People think I'm saying photo. I'm saying Fota. It's just the Kildare accent. Sorry about that. Anyway, whatever you call it, it's nestled at the heart of a peaceful island surrounded by gorgeous scenery and just 8 miles from the bustling city of Cork. It's a two-night stay for two people. Breakfast on both mornings and dinner on one of the evenings in the Amber Lounge. Loads of things to do. Swimming pool, world-class spa, fine dining restaurant, golf. Loads of walking tracks around the resort. And you'll be staying, one of our winners, well, our winner today will be staying in a cosy and comfortable self-catering. Oh, no, sorry, don't. They'll be staying in a luxurious room. You can find out more at photoisland.ie. Photoisland.ie. It's a 5-star resort. Hello, Ronan.
Hello, Ray.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And
good. I'm good. So you're finished work now?
I am indeed, on the way home now, yeah.
Right, and what, you have tomorrow off, have you, or what? Or no?
No. Back in tomorrow, off for the weekend.
Right, and you have chores to do when you get home?
Indeed I have. There's dandelions there, the side of the cabbages there, right, in the driveway that have to be tended to, and the grass to be cut, and the whole lot, so.
Yeah, and what will you pull them up, or will you just cut the heads off them?
Well, we've got to get around to spraying them, as is the job, so yeah, for now, anyway, it's a temporary fix, isn't it?
Yeah.
Knock the head off them with your boots.
It's manly work, though, Ronan, manly work.
Oh, absolutely.
And who's at home to watch you doing all that manly work?
Two kids. We've got Oscar and Emma, and my long-suffering, lovely wife, Mary Jane.
Yeah, and what ages are the two children?
So we've got Oscar at 4, and he'll be almost 4, and then we have Emma at 7 months.
Right, wow, that's the young family.
It's a busy house, yeah.
Yes, and you're into vintage motorbikes.
Yeah, vintage classic bikes, yeah, that's the hobby. So, weather permitting this weekend, Mammy's taking kids down to see the grandparents in Care, so maybe there's a spin around Northall there on the cards.
Right, and will you go on your own or will you have company?
No, we get a couple of us together, and that's the idea. And,
yeah, will you talk me through that? Because when I see groups of lads on vintage bikes, and I'm mm-hmm. wondering what's going on there, you know, because can you chat while you're, you know, have you got communication between each other?
No, right.
No.
The stops.
Oh, it stops, right, okay.
Oh, of course, you know. Depends on where you want to be or how long you have to get out.
Yeah.
Some people are down by the clock, others have the whole day to do it. So
right.
It can depend, and a lot weather depending as well sometimes.
So say you go for 40 miles and then you stop and you have a coffee and have a chat and then back on.
Yeah, and yeah, that could be it. Yeah,
another 40 miles, right, okay.
Or there could be a couple of pints of unleaded on the way either, wherever, a nice hostelry in between.
Yeah, unleaded, of course, it'd have to be.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, there's a great selection now, isn't there, of unleaded alcohol?
There is, yeah, and around our way, so we might take in the sinking pub now and something like that, around that way kind of thing on Saturday.
Right,
that might be
okay. Well, enjoy that. And the weather is supposed to be good. You're up against Kieran Kerrigan, who's in Mullingar. Hello. How are you doing, Kieran?
How are you, Ray? How are things?
Good. And how are you?
Sure, I'm not too bad. Tired, Ray.
Yeah.
Long old day.
Yeah, you're a postman. What time are you up
at? I am, I was up around 4 to 5.
All right, that's early enough. It's easier, though, during the summer.
It's lovely, Ray. The weather is great, and, you know, most of the time, anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's bright when you're getting up and it's bright when you're coming home.
Yeah, and what time would you be finished at, Kieran?
I was finished actually around 2 o'clock, so it's not too bad.
That's lovely, isn't it?
I came back in just to park up, plug in the van and collect my young lad there. He's out dropping into the car beside me from CPS.
Right, what's his name?
Thomas.
Right, and whereabouts is Thomas at in his education?
He's just nearly finished his first year in secondary.
Right, and you have a daughter, Laura, as well.
Yeah, she's finishing primary school now in the next few weeks.
That's big news, isn't it?
I think she's looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
how long have you been a postman for?
I'm either 21 or 22 years, right?
Right. You've seen a lot of changes. Were you just a bike man when you started?
Yeah, I was on the bike for a few years, and then in diesel vans, and now it's electric vans down here in Mullingar.
Yeah, yeah. And the number of packages you're delivering now has gone through the roof.
It's gone crazy in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
with Amazon and all the online shopping.
But in a way, that's good for you because people are they're looking forward for the postman and the package and brightens up their day.
And it's after it's probably after saving the post office.
Yes, there it is. It's after saving on post. It is.
Yeah.
You do a little bit of quizzing.
I do. Yeah, I like going to table quizzes and that.
Right.
Now, of course. Yeah, didn't get to go too many in the last couple of years, but I would be, in the Thursday night, I'd go with a few lads and that.
Our little quiz is a little bit different in that it's clips, so it's not your traditional. So it's probably a little bit trickier. But anyway, lads, Ronan and Kieran, three questions each on three clips. If you go for a long clip, it's a little bit easier, so you get 1 point for that. Shorter clip will get you 2 points, and whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. If it's a draw in points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both, Ronan and Kieran.
Cheers.
And it's just Ronan as opposed to Ronan, and it's Kieran as opposed to Kieran. Now, Ronan, the year is 1984, and we're starting at the movies. So, do you want a long clip or a short clip?
Oh, look, we'll have to go short.
Short, okay. A young man breaks three important rules concerning his new pet. What was the movie? And here is your short clip.
Mogwai. I don't know, some Chinese word. I just call him Gizmo.
And it is.
Oh, I can see him.
Yeah.
I can see his little eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not. Batsy's not included.
No, I know there was little lads in that as well. No, it's Gremlins.
Gremlins, oh
yes.
No.
And here's the thing I didn't know, but the voice of Gizmo is actually performed by comedian, actor and television host Howie Mandel. I think he's a judge on The X Factor over in America. I see he has a new quiz on Netflix as well. Anyway, no points for you, Ronan. Ciarán, a chance for you to go in front. 1984 at the movies, long or short?
We'll go short as well.
Short, okay. This is an assassin on a mission in a science fiction movie. Can you name it? Here's your short clip.
They look human. Sweat, bad breath, everything.
Terminator.
It is Terminator. Well done on getting that. Arnold Schwarzenegger was propelled to movie star status after he played a cyborg assassin sent from the future to kill the mother of humanity's saviour. So you get 2 points for that. Now, Ronan, back to you.
Okay.
We're music this time from 1984. Long or short?
Short, please.
Yes, you sort of have to. this held the top spot in the Irish charts for 4 weeks in 1984. Can you name the song or the singer?
I long to see the sunlight in your head.
Well...
Hello, is it me you're looking for? Lionel Richie.
Hey!
Hey!
I thought you were going to sing it there, but yeah, 2 points for you. Well done. Ciarán, you're on two, but you have this question in hand. You can go in front with this. So it's music from 1984. Long or short?
Oh, we'll go short again.
Short again, okay. Yeah. This held the number one spot in Ireland for 5 weeks. Can you name the song or the singer?
No chocolate cover.
I just called to say I love you, Stevie Wonder.
That's it. You're right. You're on four. Well done. Now, Ronan, you have to go short on this and hope that Ciarán trips up on the last question. We'll see how you go. Okay, so it's news and current affairs from 1984. I presume you're going short.
Short, please.
Yes, yeah. A new radio program was broadcast for the first time in 1984. Can you name it? And here is your short clip.
A review of the papers by Taoiseach Dick Spring and Australian Rules in Croke Park.
It's a bit before my time. Today, tonight?
It was a radio program.
Morning Ireland.
I don't know. There you go. There you go. It was Morning Ireland, but you gave us Today Tonight first. So.
Right.
Sorry about that, nice. Ronan. Yeah. We'll send you out a couple of Radar Show mugs. Hard luck on that one.
Thanks, Ryan. Good luck, Ciarán. Enjoy the weekend.
Yeah. Thanks, Ronan. Thanks for being here.
See you, Ronan. Bye. That's Ronan Fowler there in Selbridge. Now, Ciarán Carrigan in Mullingar, well done. You're off to Fota Island Resort, and you can find out what's in store for you at fotaisland.ie. Loads of things to do down there. They have a golf course, swimming pool, world class spa, loads of things to do. So enjoy that. I presume you'd be taking Elizabeth with you.
I'll be taking Elizabeth, yeah.
And
We'll have a good weekend away.
Yeah, I see that your anniversary is on the 1st of July. You might make it an anniversary present.
16 years married the 1st of July. So.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Well done. Well
Thanks
done, Ciarán. Nice talking
great
to you.
Job.
See you
right,
now.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 ray@rte.ie. Now, following on from the success of Escape the Rooms, sibling collaborators Stephen and Anita Mangan are back with a brand new children's book, a title that I love, The Fart That Changed the World. And we say good afternoon to Stephen and Anita Mangan, who are in the studio in London. Good afternoon to you both.
Hi, Ray.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Hello.
Stephen, I've spoken to you before. So, Anita, hello. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Very good. Very excited to be here.
Yeah, congratulations on the book. And are you older, younger than Stephen?
I'm way younger. I'm a year younger.
Okay. Well, actually, I knew the answer to that question. And you're sort of Irish twins, as they call them.
Almost, yeah.
Almost, yeah. That's. I think if it's within 13 or 14 months, you're described as an Irish
twin. Is that the cut-off point? Yeah,
definitely.
Yes, yeah. Congratulations to you both. Laugh out loud stuff. So Stephen, we spoke to you about the last book. Huge success. You've got the bug, I believe, have you?
I do indeed.
Yes. Yeah. And how has that changed your life?
At my advanced age, it's very exciting to be starting a whole new, feels like a whole new career. You know, I've been an actor for 25, nearly 30 years. And to get into writing and writing children's books, especially, which I'm really enjoying, is fantastic. You know, as an actor, you come into a project, a lot of the big creative decisions have already been made. They've got scripts and they've chosen directors and they've cast it, and you turn up, you know, halfway along the process. But with writing, you're there at the beginning. It's the blank sheet of paper.
Yeah.
I have three boys of my own who are 14, 11 and 6. And it's just, you know, I see them absorbed by screens and video games and TV, you know, like all kids, I think, these days. And I love reading so much as a kid myself. It's very nice to write stuff that, you know, they're enjoying and that they getting a kick out of.
Yes. So it's King Fabian III.
And
he's the one who farts and changes the world.
Yeah. Do you know what? When I came up with that title, it never occurred to me that I'd be interviewed on the radio and have to say that word so many times. but he does. I mean, the idea behind the book was the butterfly effect, which I'm sure you know all about, Ray. Idea that a butterfly flapping its wings in one part of the world can set off a chain of events that might lead to a hurricane in another part of the world. So I thought it seemed like a good starting point for children, because I think often they feel that they're so small and powerless that the things they do don't really impact on the world. And I wanted to write a story where, you know, one small action led to another one, led to another one, blah, 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 and to the world literally changed.
We don't know if it was involuntary or voluntary. That's not specified.
The exciting incident was involuntary.
Involuntary.
It's a royal fart, because I have it on a good authority that they do it too.
it's a cautionary tale as well, that don't tell lies, because King Fabian sort of credited the fart to his butler, Dimmock. And that's where the problem starts, isn't it?
That's where the problem starts, because he isn't honest enough or brave enough to own up and say, I made a mistake, and to take responsibility. And we obviously have parallels, you know, inadvertent parallels in our parliament at the moment, a bit of that going on. But he doesn't take responsibility. He can't face up to disappointing his rather stern wife. It's a problem.
And Anita, you do the illustrations and you obviously have great fun with them. Would Stephen have to, you know, approve, say, your image of King Fabian there?
He does have to approve it, but luckily he's approved everything I've done. He's a very good client. Yeah,
I know who wears the trousers in this family.
Yeah,
tell us. So your younger sister and you were thick as thieves, very close, which isn't a given.
Not at all. But we do. Yeah, there's three of us in the family, and we're all born within sort of 3 and a bit years of each other. Not of each other in total. We are. We've always got on really well. And especially now, as we're working together as well.
I've spoken to Stephen before about his children, and Jack was the protagonist in the first book. Now Frank is, and then Harry will be looking forward to his book. Have you got children of your own, Anita?
I do. I have two teenagers, Maddie and Si.
So they're beyond the target market then.
They are, but they are reading it, currently reading it. So, and my husband's read it, and he's way beyond the target market. but you know, saying that, I think it's one of those books that crosses all ages you know, everybody loves it.
And it's irreverent, and it's funny, and it's
exactly
maybe even just slightly thought provoking. Yes, which is
well, you never know. I mean, that may have accidentally happened. You know, we live in hope.
So, Stephen, the last time we spoke, you were heading into the final season of The Split. We spoke to Abby Morgan actually last week. She has a brilliant memoir out. I don't know if you know that.
I have. I've read it. Yeah.
Yes,
fantastic.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah.
So honest.
And you were telling us about a movie that you'd shot or just finished shooting A Gaza Weekend, which was coincidentally about a pandemic, which was shot before the pandemic. So where's that at?
That's now finished, and I think it will start appearing at some point. I mean, that's if anyone's interested in watching a lighthearted look at a pandemic. It could be the worst timing in the world for a movie, but we'll see. It's done. I haven't seen it yet. The writer-director is Palestinian, but he's based some of the time in London. So next time he's back, I'm hoping to have a look at that and see how it turned out. Yeah, it got interrupted halfway through by the real pandemic, so... Mm. We shot half of it in Israel and then the rest of it in Jordan, which was a treat, a fantastic country.
The two of you did that brilliant thing. I look forward to it every Saturday morning. It's in the Guardian magazine. It's where they take a photograph from years ago and then they recreate it. So it was you. What age were you in the original photograph?
About 3 or 4, I think.
Yeah.
Young. It's quite disturbing, the modern day take on it. I mean, it looks like, I don't know if you watch The League of Gentlemen, it's a bit Royston Vasey, isn't it? Because we're sort of dressed in the same gear as we were when we were three.
Holding hands. And you have a suit and a thick.
I mean, you wouldn't want to bump into the two of us in a dark alley looking like that. You'd run for your life.
You do look like the living dead. I think actually League of Gentlemen has been kind.
Their lawyers will be onto us.
I don't know, socks and sandals is a good look, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, and there's huge Irish connections because both your parents were Irish. From over in Mayo, wasn't it? Near Belmullet, Dahoma or someplace, is it?
Dahoma, yeah. Dad was from Dahoma. Mum from Gisala, which is just a couple of miles away. Yeah. Just on the mainland, looking at Achill Island. Pretty about as far west as you can go, almost. So,
yeah. I'm just thinking back to this time. You were in the back garden in England, and probably that was a time of the year where you were looking forward to coming over to Ireland. Right? Was it an annual trip, Anita?
Yeah.
It was. It was a very long journey up to Liverpool, and then overnight on the ferry, and then across the entire country.
Yes.
With the three of us in the back. Playing, fighting, Stephen lying on the back of the car, and Lisa and I in the footwells because we thought that was our place.
Right.
Can you imagine?
As the younger sisters.
Feeding me grapes.
Yeah, feeding grapes.
And back then, of course, the trip across Ireland from Dunleary to Dahoma. That was a big trip.
Six and a half hours. We'd stop every time at the Longford Arms, I remember.
Right.
And it was never open. It's happened every year. You'd get there and ask for a cup of tea and be told the kitchen was shut. And we never seemed to learn that was going to happen. Driving from London to Mayo in the 70s felt like you were going to the other side of the planet. It took that long. And especially when you were, 6 or 7 years old, it just feels endless. So it did arriving in Belmullet just felt like around the world in 80 days, it felt epic.
But then we had the reward of all our hundreds of cousins waiting for us on the beach. So it's all good.
It's wild over there, isn't it? Like, the landscape is quite wild.
Yeah, oh, really wild. Yeah, yeah. No trees. I mean, it's so, a lot of it beautiful. I mean, and starkly sort of wildly beautiful.
Yes, Like if the beach wasn't there, you'd describe it as bleak.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on a good day, there's nowhere like it on
Earth.
Yes,
yes.
It depends what you mean by good day. It was sort of wild. I mean, I love it. And it's sort of still undiscovered because it's not on the, it doesn't have the tourist.
No, you still have to drive
cachet.
Forever to get to it, Stephen.
But it's not on the way to anywhere else. I mean, Kerry and Cork get all the tourists and Connemara is, but no one seems to go to Mayo for holidays. So it's still undiscovered in that way. So it feels like a secret.
Yes, maybe I told you this before, but way back in the day, I think it was The Word or The Tube or one of those late night, Friday, Saturday night programmes on Channel 4 or BBC 2. They did, they sent somebody to, like Chris Evans, to the Anchor nightclub in Belmullet.
Because
it was the most remote nightclub in Europe at the time. There wasn't a nightclub within 50 miles, and that was its claim to fame.
Well, our uncles had a dance hall in Belmont Palm Court, and we would sit with the band before they went on. Big Tom and Margot, all sort of big hits.
And early Boyzone as well.
Boyzone played there at one point, yeah.
Did they?
Yeah, they did.
So is book three then, have you sat down to think about that, or is it finished?
No, I'm so busy, you know, finishing, because I was, I played Scrooge over Christmas in the theatre in London, and when I should have been writing the book, really. So I've just kind of finished that. Anita's done all the illustrations. It's out tomorrow. And then that we start thinking about the next book soon. But it'll have to have someone called Harry as its main character.
Yes.
I don't think there are any other children's books with a Harry as a main character on there, so I should be okay.
We've done our research. Yeah. I think there are.
Yeah. I know both your parents are dead, so, you know, the fact that you, as brother and sister, are doing this together would probably be very special if they were alive.
Oh, totally. But, we have, as we said, we have a big family, and we get a lot of support from aunties and uncles and cousins, and, you know, everyone's rooting for us. It's so lovely.
I see that in the publicity that there's a quote from me. So,
there you go.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's the first.
Can we have another one?
No, but it's brilliant because Edith Bowman says a beautiful and exciting adventure that ignites the imagination. Right. This is about your first book, and then it's brilliant. Ray Darcy.
Well, it's better than Stephen and Anita who.
So what happens? You're doing all this publicity now as brother and sister, and is that a little bit strange? Because Stephen, you would have been used to doing interviews on your own.
Yes, I would.
So having Anita sitting beside you there, is that
a real treat? Because, you know, it becomes, when you first start out, you know, you're beside yourself with the idea anyone might interview you on the radio or on telly. But I've been acting for a while now. So to have Anita come along and just to see, you know, her enthusiasm and excitement to be part of it, it's great. And it's, you know, we get on very well. And I never have to worry that she's going to say anything, you know, horrendous about me. Are you, sis?
Oh, no, I'm not. No, never.
No, go on. Go on. We want the dirt on Stephen Mangan. And you're perfectly positioned, Anita. Just one bit of information that we don't know about Stephen Mangan that people would be interested in.
He's squeaky clean.
No, I don't.
There you go.
I mean, he did used to do this annoying thing again on our car journeys to Ireland, where he would sit there and put his finger on my shoulder just for ages, and I would try and not, you know, not get the bait, and he would just sit there for ages with a finger on the shoulder until I just went, all right, that's enough, get off. But I tried to
I'll
hold
take that as the worst thing.
There you go. That's the worst thing you've ever done, Stephen Mangan. You are squeaky clean.
We're putting that on the cover.
Stephen put his finger on me.
Yeah. Well, I remember my wife always tells a story about her long journeys, you know, going to campsites in France, and family of three, her older sister, younger brother, and the refrain from the back was, "She's touching my skin! She's touching my skin!"
I mean, that's what happens, isn't it? On occasion, the car would be pulled over when Dad had enough. We'd get her.
Go and walk the rest of the way.
But they never did. You never do that as a parent, do you? You know,
lose the temper, no.
No, not lose the temper, but make them walk home.
There's a lot of threats, but they never followed through.
So finally, fart. Putting fart in the title of a book.
Yeah.
Was there much debate about that?
Well, actually, the publishers did say initially, can we make it the burp that changed the world? And I did put my foot down, if that's an appropriate expression. It just seems to me funnier, you know, the way it is, fart that changed the world. Because hopefully it's an intriguing title. You think, how can one of those change the world? Yeah. But like I said, I didn't think it through. We did Alan Titchmarsh, his show.
Yes.
And he said, I've been in broadcasting for 40 years. I've never said that word on the television before. So we are changing people's careers by making them say that word.
It also allows you to say the fart that changed the world is released.
Yes!
There you go.
Well, it has the smell of success about it.
Hey!
The fart that changed the world, Stephen Mangan, illustrated by his younger sister, Anita Mangan.
Exactly.
Is in bookshops now and highly recommend from here. Stephen, thank you very much for talking to us. Anita, thank you, and mind yourselves.
Thanks, Ray. Bye now.
That's it from us. Sarah's on the way. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.